Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
And welcome to downtown St. Louis. I am Paul Harris with Team Poker Stars Pro Dennis Phillips by my side and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan live from Southern California. Welcome back to the show, Joe, after a week off.
Hey, thank you, Paul.
Nice to have you here. We're also expecting Phil Hellmuth to join us in about 15 minutes or so. And Dennis, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing great. Been in town for a few days, actually. That's a change.
Yeah.
Heading for Vegas on Thursday.
You're going out there because you are going to be part of the ceremony surrounding the final table for this year's November 9?
Actually, not for sure what. I got Ty Stewart sent me an email asking if I would be on stage at 11:45 on Saturday. And I said, yeah.
But you don't know what that means.
I have no idea what that means.
Traditionally, the person who does shuffle up and deal is the previous year's winner. Last year, when you were at the final table, Jerry Yang,
correct,
was the 2007 champion, he did shuffle up and deal.
Correct.
Is Peter Eastgate going to be there to do it this year?
See, I have no idea. I assume he is, and he rightfully should be the one doing it and such.
What I'm asking is it like the Miss America pageant where Peter Eastgate and the runner-up, Yvonne Demidov, don't show up? You, as number three, you've got to step up and do shuffle up and deal.
I would love to do that, but I'm assuming that's not the case. I'm not for sure why he wants me out there. ESPN has also called. I've got a couple of interviews set up on Friday. Kevin Schaffel, the gentleman from Florida that's in the final table, has a little party, a little get-together on Friday he's asked me to go to, which I will. There's a whole variety of things. My phone's just ringing off the hook right now.
You are going to have a very busy week, and, of course, next week we will not only do a recap of what happened at the final table, but also a preview of you on high-stakes poker, and by then you'll know who your opponents are going to be.
Correct.
When are you taping that? Do you have a definite date?
Yeah, the 11th, 12th, and 13th are the 3 days. It looks like right now what Maury's going to have, he's going to have eight players on the first day on the 11th, eight more on the second day on the 12th, and a combination of the two on the 13th.
Uh-huh.
And there might be some shuffling in and out during those first 2 days also. Right now I'm tentatively scheduled to be on the 12th and the 13th. It looks like.
So that's Thursday and Friday of next week.
Correct.
You might get called in for two sessions.
I could easily, and we need to be there on the 11th just in case too.
Well,
there's always things come up.
This portion of the show is brought to you by One Time Apparel. I'm wearing a One Time sweatshirt right now, a zip-up white hoodie put together by the folks at One Time. Just one of the many items they've got in their whole roster of clothing for poker players just like you. It was a big hit at Pokerpalooza this summer at the World Series of Poker, and he's taken it to Tunica and other places on the road. And, of course, he's online as well. Kevin Steffen, the guy behind One Time Apparel, has got that website, onetimeapparel.com. Go click on it right now, and you can see all the original designs he's got for T-shirts and hoodies and baseball jerseys and polo shirts and so much more, plus hats as well, if you're the kind of player who wants to pull that hat down over your eyes while you're playing so nobody can see what you're doing, or you just like to wear a hat in your regular non-poker playing life. Kevin's got them for you at onetimeapparel.com. And ladies, ask about the pink camo hat available just for you. The website, again, is onetimeapparel.com, where you can charge it to your credit card or use PayPal, and a portion of the proceeds will go to help out various charitable organizations. onetimeapparel.com. Okay, we're just days away from this year's November 9 playing the final table of the World Series of Poker main event. You were the chip leader last year going into it. Tell us what you think of this year's chip leader, Darvin Moon.
Darvin, never been in this position before, never had this kind of media, never had this kind of pressure before. Actually, I think he's handling it fairly well. Talked to him several different times. Again, like we talked about a couple of shows ago, he just basically said, goodbye, guys. I'm going to disappear for a couple of weeks. I'm going to get my head together, and away we go.
Yep.
He's handling it very well, it seems like. But I still think when he gets out there, he's going to be amazed at the pressure, amazed at the media, the flashing lights, the whole bit. It's something he's never experienced before, and he's going to have to take a deep breath.
I remember how red your eyes were at the end of that 13-hour session you played before you got knocked out in third place from those ESPN lights that were so bright and right there over the table. And Joe, let's bring you in here for a little poker coach view of a guy who has 30% of the chips as the chip leader going into this. Is that a huge thing for him? Does that make him a prohibitive favorite?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of people will have general strategies going in. it wouldn't be a horrible strategy for a guy like him to think, hey, I can fold my way to third place and end up with average chips three-handed and then maybe play. And, you know, the money's all in the top three, you know, the real, I mean, I'd kill for ninth place money, you know, but I mean the real big, big money's top three. Wouldn't be a bad strategy. The problem with that is once the cards get in the air and a couple hands happen, whether it's a small cash game or who knows what, people sometimes go off the hook and anything can happen. So I'm really going to be interested to see, you know, when the cards, if they turn on him, which they should. I mean, I think that Darvin Moon has probably had the greatest run of cards in the history of poker.
Even better than Jamie Gold?
Oh, I think not even close. I mean, just for, you know, Jamie Gold in some spots played some good poker. You know, in some spots was able to tell the truth and get his opponents to make horrible calls. You know, and tell the truth and get his opponents to make really bad laydowns. He actually was able to outplay some people. You know, that strategy, you know, maybe failed him once people were onto him from then on out, you know, but he won $12 million, you know, doing it that way out of the blue. You know, and yes, I mean, he had some pretty good cards, but nothing remotely close, you know, to Darvin Moon. Gets it in the first day with queens against aces. He flops quads. You know, set after set, aces and kings. You know, Dennis, he four bets with ace-king versus Dennis when it got down to, what was that, 50, 60 people left, Dennis?
Yeah, right in that area, you know, when I had the pocket.
Right in that area, you know, and of course he hits the ace, you know, on the four bet. You know, I mean, and that's a small one to me. I mean, just over and over again, so many hands, Paul. Ace-jack flops the nuts in a rainbow flop against a set of tens, and the board never pairs. So, you know, I'm happy for him. Someone's going to run good, but I've just never seen it to the extent to what he's had. And it will be very interesting when the cards get in the air if he takes a bad beat and, you know, see how he handles it and how he may change, you know. And if he has to play a little bit of poker, you know, I think he's going to be at a big, big disadvantage at that table. And his chip stack could disappear pretty quickly.
Well, actually, to comment about the hand that I had against him when I had the queens, and it turned out he had the ace-king on that one. Because of the reputation, because of the way he was supposedly being played, I'd only played a couple of hands with him. I just basically sat down. I had no chance to get a read on him or anything like that. But when that was actually happening, because of the feedback from the other players and just from my general read on him in natural, from his attitude, his position and such, I actually played that very, I thought I played it well. Because I'm telling you, I had 40%
well,
of my chips in there pre-flop. He, yeah. You know, it, just to call him, it was so easy. And actually, the logical thing to do there would be to shove on it. And
right.
I didn't. My idea was to basically put the flop out there as long as no danger cards come. You know, then I shove.
There you go.
It. And obviously, the ace comes. He bets out enough to put me all in. I fold the hand. He shows me the ace-king. It's like, there you go. But because of the reputation and the way he was playing, I thought he gave it away a little bit there on it. So... you know, we'll see how he does and how he plays.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table, live broadcast on 590 The Fan, KFNS, every Tuesday at 2. And, of course, our podcast available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Now let's bring in our guest for today.
Yeah, our guest today has won 11 World Series of Poker bracelets. He's cashed in over 140 tournaments. He's won almost $9 million in the last 20 years. There's only been three players in history to win three bracelets the same year. He is one of them. He has his own clothing line. He has his own publishing company. He just released another book this year, Deal Me In, where he's got 20 of the top players around talking about how they turn pro. Phil, welcome to the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Phil Hellmuth, how are you today?
Hey, how's it going, Dennis?
It's going great, my friend. Very good.
I'm here in Vegas, so, I mean, I've had a little skip along here. I shot Poker After Dark Thursday, Friday, flew to the Green Bay Packers game, and they were good enough to give me some sideline passes, and I was hanging out with Jan Stenerud, was in our box, actually. My dad invoked his name on the field, and then we went up to our box, and he was in there. It was kind of fun, and then I flew back yesterday, and right when I landed, I had to give Jeff Shulman some lessons, and, you know, I invented some, I kind of made some suggestions to him that were a little bit different. That he's going to use, but I can't mention what they are now. And it's really exciting. I mean, they feel like I've added a tremendous amount, and it makes me feel good. You know, I mean, once we're sitting down talking about No Limit Hold'em, and Diego Cordovez is there, and I just love the way these guys are doing it, Dennis. They have printed out every single hand history of every hand that every one of the November 9 played the whole series. It's like 30 pages. We read every hand history. They set up the chips with pictures of the players, and we're playing, all these, freeze-outs, but everybody has to take on the characteristic of the player that they're playing, and huge discussions about hands, and I find myself accessing information that, that I haven't looked at in a long time. And then Barry Shulman just won the WSOP, and it's really interesting to hear his perspective. And Diego Cordovez is a great Hold'em player. So it's been pretty interesting.
Well, I don't think people realize, because we did the same thing. We had actually a playbook on each of the other eight players where we analyzed and watched whatever we could on TV. We got a hand history of all of them. We did the in-depth. People don't realize the stuff you're talking about is just awesome, because that's exactly what he needed the help for. And it sounds like you're right there in his corner for him. There is so much you can do to
prepare
for this.
And he and I are very similar styles anyway. So, a lot of the stuff that I say makes sense to him. I made some changes, which you're going to see in the first hour. You're going to be like, whoa, what's going on? That I think is just tremendous. And everybody on our panel loved the changes that I've made. And it's been a lot of fun. And, of course, Dennis, I don't live in Vegas. So, I flew from Green Bay back to Vegas because of just this week. There's so much happening here. I have ESPN's coming to Jeff's house tonight. And then I have another interview at 3. And I have 3 ESPN things tomorrow. And I'm filming 2 Poker After Darks again Thursday, Friday, cash games. And it's pretty hectic week here.
We have so much to talk to you about, Phil, but I'm curious, in your sessions with Jeff, how much of that time do you work on tells you might have picked up about those players? I know you don't want to give away too much of the strategy that you've talked about there, but how much are tells and reading tells a part of your game, and how much are you trying to make them a part of Jeff's game, or maybe it already was?
Well, if I couldn't read tells well, if I couldn't read players well, I don't know, maybe I'd have 3 bracelets. I mean, I think that... maybe 4 or 5. I don't know, but the difference between having 11 bracelets and say 4 bracelets is the ability to read people, read their tells, and then go with it. And so, I think that right now Jeff is looking real sharp to me. I mean, he's reading the players at the table well. Now, it's interesting, as you know, Dennis, you went through this. So we're watching, last week's coverage, and we're watching this week's coverage, which is tonight. And
yes.
We're just like, did you see what he did? Did you see what he did? Did you see what he did? And discussing hands, and I'm telling him the moves that I didn't like, and I'm telling him, and we're talking about, this guy seems to have a good read on you, this guy doesn't. And, but bottom line is I don't want to arm him with a playbook that I just say you have to use. I just keep saying, look, what you need to do is you need to just trust your reads above all, because... if you're going to win the World Series of Poker, you're going to have to be reading people well.
I agree with you 100%. You don't want to change his game to where he's not comfortable. He has to play his own game. What you're trying to do in the, 10 different arenas of poker, tells being one of them, is just sharpening, moving from an 8 at that level to a 9 or something like that on him. And it sounds like that's what you're doing.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Well, I gave him one tactic that may have jumped him from 8 to 9.5. I mean, just one tactic.
Sweet.
that I suggested, and so it's going to be interesting. It's something I'll be able to talk about, Saturday during play, and it's something I'll be able to talk about for sure on Sunday. And I've already written an article about the tactic, but no one's seen the article except me, so. I tell you, I've really gotten into it, Dennis. I mean, he hired me as a coach, and then we decided not to do anything for a month. And then I just kept thinking about how to win, what are the chip positions, what to do. And, it's a real challenge. And, you throw your whole self into helping somebody like that because, the world knows I'm helping him, and I'm vested as far as, if the hire he does, I'll make some money. But more importantly, my reputation on the line a little bit too. So
yeah, I don't know. I love this. Something one of the best things I've gotten in this last year and a half, 2 years, is being able to actually talk with people in depth about hands to a level that I never could before. analyzing it, the possible plays. What was this guy thinking? You know, what were you thinking in return? Type stuff, and it sounds like that's what you were doing with Jeff there. I would have loved to sit in on these meetings.
I think we could charge people. We could have charged people to come, and to be honest, it sharpened me up because.
Well, sure.
All the stuff that I've done, you know, came into focus because I'm trying to use all my information, all my knowledge, and these hands just come up, and you just, all right, now let's flip them up and look at why did you do this? Why did he do that? And I don't know. It's just very. It's just very educational for everybody there, and it's a lot of fun. And I just Diego Cordova is like the CEO, and then I'm like the gunslinger, the consultant, and then Barry Shulman just won the WSOP. What were you doing to win? Very interesting stuff, you know. So it's just kind of amazing the way that they just have these chip stacks. I mean, it just looks so beautiful at the table the way they set it up. And it really is a great story. I mean, it's really amazing approach. You know, I mean, throughout my life, you know, you played till 10 or 11 or 12 or 2 in the morning, and you had to come back the next day and play the final table. There was no time to study.
Yeah. It's definitely different than previous times. I know you're close friends with Phil Hellmuth. I mean,
with Phil Ivey.
With Phil Ivey, I'm sorry. I'm sure that's helped you out a little bit, too, and everything. Any insight on Phil and his strategy and how he's going to try to play at this thing? What would you do in his position?
Well, I think I know what he's going to do. I think that Ivy, you know, I mean, he's just, he basically anteed off a lot of chips and played super tight to make sure he made the final table, to make sure he had the shot. And now, you know, he doesn't really care that much if he finishes ninth or fifth. I mean, that doesn't matter to him. He has tons of money. Phil Ivey, I like to say he's, you know, one of the greatest players, maybe the greatest player because he's a triple threat. He's won a fortune in the biggest side games in the world, in the real world, a fortune in the biggest side games on the internet, and he's also an accomplished, tournament player on the trail of all-time greatness there, too. So the guy's amazing. I just think that it's a different Phil Ivey. I think that, 10 years ago he would have been a little bit more aggressive, but I think that, if I'm in his shoes, I'm thinking, okay, let's just, sit back and let other people make some mistakes. And he has a couple of crazy players on his left, especially Begleiter. And if I'm Jonathan Little, I'm telling Begleiter that if you move in on Ivy, if you think you're right and you move in on him, you have a free swing because you have $30 million and he only has $9 million. And, if you move in on him, it's going to tell him that you can't run him over and it's going to put a lot of heat on him. And that's probably how I would coach it. I know that Jonathan Little is coaching.
Right.
So we're talking with Phil Hellmuth here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 of the Fan, KFNS, and on our podcast on thechipleader.com. And one of the things we're doing here today is running down the final table, which we'll play this weekend in Las Vegas. Give us your thoughts on some of these other players, like these young pros, Eric Buckman and Joe Catta, and some of the older guys like Kevin Schaffel. What do you think of these guys?
It's interesting, they haven't really been shown a lot to this point. I think tonight's a very illuminating night, and so Jeff and I and our whole kind of staff are going to sit around and we're going to watch all the hands tonight. And then and ESPN's going to come over, they're going to record us, and we're going to have a long session. It might be our last session because I think that, Jeff is basically ready to go. And so I think... Joe Catta looked interesting to me. I mean, it seemed like he had a couple of good reads on Jeff, and it seemed like he played pretty good. I mean, he's 21, but we didn't see enough. I mean, did he get lucky in some spots? I mean, I heard from some people that he was never all in and some impressive stats, but is that true or not, and will he fall apart? I mean, the thing is, you get to that final table, and half the field is going to fall apart. At least three of those guys are just going to give their chips away, and that's what happens every year at the series.
Well, I wonder, though, this last day, because just what you mentioned earlier, everybody trying to make that final nine, are they actually playing the game that they're going to play when they come back here in a couple of days? Can you get true reads on their game here on this last week that's going to be televised?
I think so, because they still have to bluff, and they still have to, bet when they have something. And so that's going to give us a lot right there. And then also it'll be interesting to see what kind of style they employ, like, you had a real wild card in there, Billy Kopp, who played, he played a really tough game. I mean, he's in there racing with, four fives and stuff like that. Now, he had that kind of big blow up there, with the 3-5 of diamonds. It's been kind of the hand of the year as far as taking criticism. But you know, the kid has a lot of talent, but he's not there. So it'll be interesting to see who else is playing those kind of hands. You know, we saw Darvin Moon play the 4-5 of spades, but he's been pretty much ABC other than that.
Yeah, well, he could be with the hands he caught.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Hey Phil, when Jeff Shulman throws the bracelet in the trash, will you pick it up?
He's not going to do that. You know, I mean, you have to
I'm kidding.
You have to understand the card player. Well, but I'll address that. Card player, magazine, you know, had a little bit of a falling out with Harris, I think. And so I think that Jeff and Barry Shulman were a little bit, personally affected by that. And I think that what you're going to see is Jeff has a totally different attitude. I mean, he was down there in 2000. You know, he was trying to win this bracelet. I was down there with him. I invoked his name on the internet broadcast, which we did on Andy Glazer's old clunky cell phone. You know? I mean, it was PhilHellmuth.com that was doing the live internet broadcast back then. And I just felt like what happened to him, he got completely screwed. So there's a soft place in my heart for Jeff. We're also business partners. I'm the one that cares about the bracelets more than anybody. And so it's interesting that I'm working with a guy who said he doesn't care. He does care. And he wants that bracelet. And I think if he gets to that spot, you're going to see a totally different attitude.
Phil, last thing about the World Series I want to ask you about, and then we're going to take a break. And I know Dennis wants to ask you about high-stakes poker, and we have other things to get to with you. But I want to read you a quote that was on one of the poker websites about a month ago. And get your reaction. It says, after speaking with Jeffrey Pollack about Harrah's starting an online poker site, Phil Hellmuth says he thinks a battle could be brewing. He says that the Harrahs and the WSOP could be in a very tough position and that Harrahs could risk losing the WSOP, which is worth $200 million. He believes that with the launch of an online poker site, Harrahs could begin to flex its muscles as a site owner during the series and restrict or take away logo usage, and that, he says, could force the other online sites to start their own tournaments. Can you tell us if that's what you really said and tell us more about that
is,
if that's what you really think?
That's 100% what I said. I mean, you know, I'm just saying, you know, you see there's a lot of coulds in there. I mean, I'm not saying that they will. And I think that, you know, since then I have the sense of the feel that they know. I mean, I think since I made that statement, it caused a little bit of a stir in the world. And I think that it brought up there's some negativity towards Harrah's from some of the, you know, top players as far as, you know, not giving enough money back, not even picking up anybody's rooms. You know, they didn't pick my room up this year or last year. You'd think I'm on, what, 80 of their, and they have 39 casinos, and in 37 of them they have poker rooms, and there's pictures of me that are as big as a wall in some of them. And they didn't even pick my room up. So I think there was a little bit of frustration there from some of the high-limit players towards not enough money going back to the players. But Harrah's says, well, we're spending a fortune putting this together. It's the rooms and it's the dealers and the, you know, and so somewhere in the middle there should be a truth. And so I think that Harrah's, you know, has, I think they've probably decided that they don't want to go to war with all of the internet sites. And so I feel like what I said then is not exactly true today. I think that they understand that, you know, that the sites would probably, if they started, you know, pushing it. I mean, owning the World Series of Poker and starting your own website at the same time, you know, online poker site, could create some problems. And I think that there's a decent chance, now I feel there's a decent chance they can navigate it successfully. But then I was starting to have some concerns, and I think a lot of people, I was voicing the concerns of a lot of people.
Yeah, well, you know, you and Annie and the other folks at Ultimate Bet and Dennis and Daniel and the other folks at Poker Stars and Phil and Howard and the other guys at Full Tilt Poker are certainly going to be keeping a very close eye on this as it goes forward, right?
That's exactly right. Everybody's going to keep a very close eye on it. I think that, you know, the World Series of Poker, as crazy as I am sometimes, as bratty as I am sometimes, and as bratty as Mike Matisau is, and, you know, as cool and collected as Phil Ivey is, I mean, I think that, you know, people like to watch the great players play. I know if I'm watching a PGA Tour you know, event, it's more entertaining for me than watching, you know, the Nike Tour. And so, you know, I think that Harris understands that they're going to lose the great players if they push them too far.
We're talking with Phil Hellmuth of the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and our podcast on thechipleader.com. We've got more to get to, including high-stakes poker. Phil's been there. Dennis is going there. We'll get to that in just a moment. First, this portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches.
Reactor Watches, that is the watch that I wear. You can see it on TV all the time on my wrist. Got a couple of comments about this Reactor Trident watch. Remember a couple of weeks ago I told you it's the only one that they allow some of the units over in Iraq to wear because it survived two of the IEDs and a suicide bomber and the whole bit like that. But they said, you know, you don't run across too many of that walking around in the U.S.
Right.
So they decided to give it a little softer test. What they did is they went out and they dropped it from a bridge 35 feet in the air onto concrete, took the same watch and threw it against a brick wall. Then they ran over it with a $300,000 supercar, and then they finally hit it with a hammer 8 times. They finally broke the crystal. This watch is unbelievable, guys. It is the most durable, the best guarantee you'll ever find anywhere on it. If something happens with this watch, which won't, but if something would happen with it, they guarantee it unconditionally, and they will have it fixed and back in your hands many times in 3 or 4 days. The best watch in the world, guys, the Reactor Watches. Go to the website, reactorwatch.com. Check it out.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Well, and in the Lumiere Theater now, they've got a show called The Ultimate Elvis Tribute. We had one of the Elvises with us last week, the guy who plays the 1970s Elvis, Bill Cherry, was here. There are actually 3 Elvises in this show, and we've got some free tickets to give away for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week, November 4th, 5th, and 6th. And if you want them, you can just call us right now at KFNS. The phone number is 314-969-0590, or on your Verizon Wireless cell phone, it's #590. They'll get you in here. You call, Iggy will pick up the phone at the other end, and he'll tell you what nights we have tickets available for Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and we'll just keep giving them away until they're all gone.
That works for me.
As long as the show's on the air today, you can get a shot at those. So we're going to reconnect with Phil Hellmuth here in just a moment, but let's bring in Joe McGowan, the poker coach, for some thoughts on what Phil was saying about some of these guys who are going to be playing in the final table of the World Series of Poker main event this weekend. Joe, you heard what Phil Hellmuth, the 11-time bracelet winner, was saying. What are your thoughts?
Well, I don't know where to begin. I have a lot of thoughts. I thought it was spot on a lot of things. And a couple spots, you know, I might tend to disagree with a little bit. But overall, I think he's pretty much right there.
What about one of the things that he said was this guy, Stephen Begleiter, who I think is second in chips behind Darvin Moon. And, oh, he's third in chips. Oh, Eric Buckman is second,
yeah.
Right, with 30, right. 34 million. And Stephen Begleiter has about 30 million. And Phil was saying a moment ago that, you know, that Begleiter can use that to kind of push around Phil Ivey and some of the other people because of the position he has at the table. What do you say to that, Joe?
Well, I think what he said was basically that he has a free swing because he has 30 million in chips and Ivy has just under 10. So with that being the case, you know, if he feels that he does have possibly the best hand or wants to make some type of semi-bluff, he does have that free swing because of the chips.
Yep.
You know, so I would tend to agree with that. And, you know, Ivy, you know, what's on his right might be good situationally, and what's on his left with Kevin and Steven, that might be a little tough for him because those guys are, I think, typically, you know, a little more gambling in spots, and I think that will continue likely at the final table.
That's the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I'm Paul Harris. He's Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips, and Phil Hellmuth is back on the line with us. Phil, you there?
Yep.
Oh, good. Good to have you back. Okay.
Okay.
So besides the World Series of Poker, there is another big event, at least in Dennis's life, coming up here in the next 10 days or so.
I'm going to be on the high-stakes poker. We're filming that the 11th, 12th, and 13th of November. And I'm going to be a little selfish here. Phil, can you help me?
I'm scheduled to play 2 of those days, so right now.
Sweet.
So I think I'm scheduled to play on the 12th and 13th. So
okay. So just never play a hand with me, and I'm okay. I'm kidding.
Well, I mean, you know, the swings on these cash games, I mean, you know, I mean, some days you can look bad and some days you look like a genius. So I think I won 280, then I lost 305 in London, then I won 275, and then I lost 150. That's my last four cash games. So, you know, I mean, it's a swingy proposition, and you don't play a lot of hands, you know, versus a normal no-limit game. But I think that if I were advising you, I would say be careful. I mean, they showed in the week where I won 275, someone raised it, someone else called, and I threw queen-jack suited away in the big blind. Now, that was crazy tight laydown, and I was making fun of myself. I would have made a straight, actually. I wouldn't have won much money, but I would have made a straight. It came 8-9 queen, and I was against deuces and the 9-4 of hearts, the Durhad. And so, you know, but I found that, you know, but I ended up winning 275 that day. So sometimes really trimming that fat is good in these cash games, because sometimes you lose a lot of money with a hand like queen-jack suited when you actually hit a pair.
Well, I talked to Maury, and he gave me a few words of wisdom. He, I don't know what I'm going to take out there, a half a million, three quarters of a million, something like that. But he said that to sit down only with $200,000 to $300,000 to start with, get a feel of the game, get comfortable with it. He said he thought Peter Eastgate may have made a mistake by sitting down with half a million to start with there and then not playing his game. So I may take him up on that. I don't know yet. I guess there's a dozen ways to play it, and I don't know.
For me, sometimes I know if I stick, I have a strategy that I may or may not stick to, but I like to buy in, like I'm going to play the 50K cash game Thursday for Poker After Dark. I plan on buying in 50. If I lose it, I'm quitting. It's so often I'll double or triple that stack, but if I lose, it seems like I'm not quite, you know, as in the same frame of mind. And, you know, it might be take a lot of discipline to quit, especially if it's a really bad beat. But right now I'm thinking that's not a bad plan, and then I'm playing the 100 buy-in cash game Friday, and then I'm playing two high-stakes pokers where the buy-in's 200. So if I do stick to that strategy, maybe you can take advantage of it. Put some heat on me.
When you sit down at a televised cash game like that, and I know Poker After Dark is different, but let's just talk about high-stakes poker for a minute. When you sit down at a table like that, who do you want to see at the table? Maybe not specific people, but tell me the types of players you want to see at that table.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I don't, I think that it's, of course, better if you have a bunch of amateurs, you know, I mean, that's more fun for me than, you know, but at the same time, you know, I mean, it doesn't matter that much. I mean, I know that the last time I played, I was a little bit in shock because Daniel was booking me in the game, and it was Patrick Antonius, and it was me, and it was Phil Ivey, and, and Durr was in there. It was a pretty tough lineup, and, you know, I was a little in shock. Daniel had ace-queen, and it had come ace-king-four, and he stuck 100,000 with ace-queen, and it just so happened that Patrick had ace-eight, and Daniel won that pot. And then when I tried going all-in, I had two tens, and it had come, you know, 10-9-7 in a raised pot. And I waited straight in a flusher. I waited till the turn was a deuce, and then I got it all-in, and Ivy had 6-8. So, I mean, I was like, Daniel's winning these huge pots with one pair, and that's what could happen, you know? I mean, you can lose with top set, and then someone will win a huge pot with top pair, and you're like, this isn't fair, this isn't right. And, you know, I mean, but that's, you know, high-stakes poker for you, you know?
Yeah, and it's going to be my first time out there. I'm still trying to find out. What I want to do is have a couple of people in there that I can talk to about other things. I would love to talk about a space trip, you know, with a gentleman from Cirque du Soleil and what happened there. I just think it would be awesome to talk to a good friend of yours, Jerry, from out there from the Lakers, Jerry Buss, and that.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea who the non-pros are going to be at the table?
Well, it's interesting. You know, there's all this war between Poker Stars and Full Tilt, so you know, none of the Poker Stars guys are playing Poker After Dark, and then none of the Full Tilt guys are playing high-stakes poker. And I guess it's nice for me. I get to play every show, you know, which is fun for me. I mean, so I think that if Guy plays, Guy, I've played with in L.A. Man, we played in a game there one night. And, I mean, he was 500,000 loser. He was playing great. He really was. And then he came back to only lose 250. I think I won 340 that night. There were some, I mean, it was just one of these insane Hollywood games. And that's a great situation. So, You know, Jerry Buss, I know how he'll play. I've played a lot of poker with him since the 80s, and he's going to be very patient. And but he will make a stand with one pair, and he might be right or he might be wrong when it finally comes down for him. Guy is going to be a lot of fun to play with, but he just, like I said, the last time I played with him, he was tough as nails. So I don't know, Dennis. I haven't heard who else is going to be there, but I know some of the Poker Stars players that are going to be there haven't played in a lot of no-limit hold'em cash games. They don't quite have the experience, so that's probably a good thing.
Well, I know Barry came out publicly and was asking for more amateurs and less pros in the future shows, that he was wanting the same thing you're voicing right now.
Phil, do players on high-stakes poker take a piece of each other?
Let me just think. Have I ever had a piece of anybody? Someone had a piece of me when I won. I think it was a two-day session. I lost 105 the first day, and I won. I don't know. I think I might have won close to 400 the second day, and I'd sold a poker player a piece of me, not at the table. I haven't heard too often of people having a piece of each other at the table, but it wouldn't concern me if they did.
I've got an email from a listener named Tim who wants me to ask you, do you wear your bracelets when you play? And why don't pros who won bracelets wear them at the tables? He says, I was at the World Series this summer and played with several pros, and none of them who had won bracelets were wearing them. Do you wear yours?
Right now I have my bracelet on. I think in a round, I still remember that I didn't wear my 1989 main event bracelet. Basically, I wore it about once a year for 18 years. And then, you know, and I watched, you know, a lot of other people did, and I gave the rest of them away. So it wasn't very often you saw me with a bracelet or a Hall of Fame watch on. And then I think, you know, on January 1st, 2007, I'm like, all right, I think you finally earned this thing or something. I don't know what really clicked in my mind, but I put it on, and I haven't really taken it off much. I've worn it the majority of days for the last, whatever, 3 years, I guess it's been. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's weird that you wouldn't wear the thing for 18 years and then you start wearing it every day. I don't really understand the rhyme or reason or the logic behind it, but a lot of guys don't wear them, that's for sure.
Did you wear it when you appeared topless in that photo shoot with Jen and ESPN magazine?
I did. Oral Hershiser was helping us with lessons last night, and he had his ring on, which was pretty cool.
All right, cool.
Hey, I said, I raised you one World Series of Poker bracelet. We were laughing.
One thing that a lot of people I don't think realize about, Phil, is you have a great side in the charity events that you help with and the different things. I know you've helped with Habitat for Humanity, Doctors Without Borders, and numerous other ones on that. And people always seem to talk about the Brat and some of your antics or whatever on that, which I attribute a lot to just being the intense play that you bring to the table. But, you know, basically kudos to you for a lot of the charity work you've done. Any word for or anything for these November 9 of what they should be giving back to the game? I think everybody should be giving back to the game something.
Yeah, I think it's important to give back. And I think that, you know, I'm doing a charity tournament November 19th in Phoenix, Arizona, and we have, you know, they wanted 30 celebrities. There's 42. Phil Locke and Jennifer Tilly are like, we want to be there. And then I saw the email today saying, oh well, we can't send a jet for you because the jet's already full, blah blah blah. And I emailed them and said, make no mistake, I want both of you guys there, and next year we'll get you on the private jet. But I mean, it also made me feel very proud that, you know, this tournament, which has my name on it, in Phoenix, and we're raising money for officers' families that have died for the families of officers that have died in the line of duty, we might raise $1 million. And I know Greg Raymer recently committed to come to the event, Dennis, you know, I tell you, it's just a pleasure to do something like that, you know, and then say that event is a Friday golf tournament and a Saturday event at the casino. And then, you know, that Wednesday, I'm doing an event in Manhattan for the Children's Hospitals of Philadelphia. Now, that one I'm charging a little bit for. Most of these events I don't charge, but Manhattan's a long way. And we're going to raise $1 million in one night. So I might raise $2 million for charity in one week, and one for the Philadelphia Children's Hospital and one for these families that, that desperately need help. And so, you know, I mean, I do think that, you know, I'm proud of the fact that, that I can make some money, that I can make a huge difference as far as charity goes. And then, you know, and the other thing people don't know about me is I've been married 20 years and I've never cheated on my wife. So, you know, I might whine too much at the table, but I'm pretty solid away from it.
Well, before before we let you go, I just want to tell one quick Phil Hellmuth story from earlier this year, because I had the pleasure of playing at the same table with Phil in the Dream Team Poker event at Caesars back in March.
Okay.
And Phil won't remember that I was there, except that I mentioned the radio show to him. But between us, there were four incredibly attractive blondes, including Jamie Gold's girlfriend, who eventually knocked me out of the tournament. But I got to play with you, Phil, for a couple of hours, and there was one hand that just knocked me out, in which you raised under the gun. It was folded all the way back around to the big blind. He called. The flop came out 10-8-7 rainbow. He bet, and you looked at him, turned your cards up, showed a pair of queens, and said, "I have no idea where you are," and you mucked your queens. Do you have any idea what was going on at that time? I know it's months and months and months ago, but I was very impressed that you would do that. Was that just because the guy bet into you, or did you have a read on him, or what was going on there? I waited all this time to ask you.
These feelings, the feelings you get aren't always 100%, you know, and so, you know, but you know, throughout my life I've been very lucky when I sense that I'm in trouble. You know, it just seems like, all right, he bet out because he flopped the nuts and he wants me to raise. So I laid one down in poker after dark the other day where the guy raised it, and we're playing five-handed, for God's sakes, and he raised under the gun, and I'm on the button. I had ace-queen offsuit, and I chose to just muck it. So what in the heck am I doing here? But I just studied him for like a minute or two, and I just had a really, really bad feeling. The big blind called him. It came 10-7 deuce, and then this guy bet 5,000. So I know he had a super strong hand, at least jacks. But you're not 100% before the flop whether you're going to look great, or but you just go with your instincts. And so I'm very curious to see what that guy had. I know the guy to my right somehow folded king-queen suited. So, I mean, it's just one of those weird hands where we both laid down big hands. The guy was a super tight player. But, you know, I mean, you hope that throughout your life you're right 90% of the time. And because when you start laying down those kind of hands that nobody else understands why you're laying down ace-queen for one bet five-handed, you know, you could look really bad.
Absolutely. Well, we were lucky enough today to be joined with Phil Hellmuth. I will see you in a couple of days out there in Vegas. I can't thank you enough for being on the show today, Phil. Just absolutely awesome as usual. And like I said, guys, there's another side to Phil that you don't see on the TV, and it's a pretty good side. So thank you again, Phil.
Okay. Have a good one, Dennis.
And now that he's gone, we can talk about your poker site. You know, when you got Mr. Ultimate Bet on there, I got to be careful about what we're doing. But this portion of the show right here is brought to you by the site that you're affiliated with, which, of course, is PokerStars. You're a member of Team PokerStars Pro.
Yes, and if you want to play with me, go to PokerStars.net. You can find me there. And another thing about this, if you've missed either of the first two episodes of the PokerStars Million Dollar Channel, they are both now available on some, along with some never-before-seen footage for the extra hands and some more tabletop, everything like that. You can go on site to PokerStars.net, and you can actually view these. And it's awesome viewing in that. So you still have a chance, too, to be on the show. If you want to do it, you've got to go on there and be one of the top tens in one of the four daily free-roll tournaments they have on PokerStars. It's 7 p.m., 8 p.m., 9 p.m., and 10 p.m. Central Time. And these are going to run all the way through November 25th. If you qualify, if you are one of those top 10, then you can send a one-minute video about yourself and why you should be on that show. And then you have the chance to play with Daniel on the first part of it against the pro, and then against Daniel in the back part of the show. So go to PokerStars.net, get on these free rolls, and maybe you too can be sent in next to Daniel and asking his advice.
Being on that PokerStars Million Dollar Challenge, which we agree, I mean, PokerStars affiliation or not, that's a pretty good poker show right there.
It's heads and shoulders above most of the others, absolutely.
We're going to try to get Joe back on the phone here. While I talk for a moment here about the Poker Players Alliance, thank you for reminding me about this, because there was just a story out this week about how the PPA has been changing the minds of not just the public, but a lot of legislators about poker legislation. There's been a lot of talk about whether the UIGEA can be overturned here in the next 12 months or whether it's going to be the next 60 months before this thing gets done. A lot has been going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of because of the work of the Poker Players Alliance. They can only do it, however, with the support of poker players like you. If you go to their website, which is theppa.org, you can find out about becoming a member of this nonprofit membership organization that only raises money through people like you. A simple $20 donation makes you a member of the PPA, and then you're in there as part of the fight for poker players online, offline, in home games, in casinos, everywhere. It's the game we all love, and we want to see it in a secure, safe, and regulated place. So join the Poker Players Alliance at theppa.org. All right, Joe and Dennis, I've got 60 seconds left on the show. Your quick prediction and thoughts as we head towards this weekend. And, Joe, we'll start with you for the final table of the November 9.
Well, I'd take the long shot Aikenhead, as my dark horse. You know, he's shortest in chips, but I think he has experience. He's been to the final table heads up before playing for a bracelet. I think he has really good play. Got a little unlucky towards the end of the last few days of the main event, and I think his price is close to 20-1 online. And if I would go against Ivy, you know, and at that price, it would be him.
Okay, Dennis?
Two wild cards at the table. Steve Begleiner doesn't need the money, although he'll obviously take it. Everybody can use the money. And Joe Cotta, the 21-year-old, who, and I have no problem with his attitude, he thinks he'll be back there five more times.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine and dandy. He has that kind of confidence.
Kevin Schaffel
out there.
Sixth in chips with about $12.3 million.
He is, because he plays a solid game. He's done real well in London, and he did real well in California.
I'm taking the number two chip leader, Eric Buckman, 28-year-old pro, $35 million in chips. I think he's got the best shot at it. We'll recap all of it next week. Dennis will be there, Joe will be there, and I'll be here in St. Louis at the Lumiere Place final table on 5 Night of the Fan KFNS.